was expecting to feel a certain kind of way about the accomplishments, and it wasn't fulfilling, and I couldn't understand why.
That's Christine Jobe talking about her time as a talented law student and the first Black female president of her class. And despite all those achievements, being terribly unsatisfied.
Her early professional life was a series of fits and starts. Big opportunities kept leading to dead ends until one day she gave in to a nagging feeling that would not go away.
It came to me and it wouldn't leave me alone. And in 3 weeks from there, I was in Spain, starting the Camino Santiago.
This is our second of two shows where we look at the transformative power of walking the Camino de Santiago. It's a brutal 800-kilometer pilgrimage across northern Spain. Hundreds of thousands of people from around the world walk the Camino each year, all of them seeking clarity.
On this episode, Christine shares her Camino experience and her winding road to fulfillment. From a lost law student to a business strategist living the life of her choosing and all the hard lessons along the way. Welcome to The Breakout, a show about smashing through life's little boxes and forging your own path. I'm Dr. Carrie Ulrich.
And I'm Kelly Gunther. Carrie and I are people and change experts and best friends. We've spent more than 25 years helping organizations navigate change and get the best out of their people.
Come on, we know change is hard, but staying the same can even be harder. On The Breakout, we prove that you can escape expectations, and best of all, we show you how. Thank you, Christine, for being here.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you guys.
I can't wait because I love recovered lawyer stories. Those are some of my favorite. Some of my favorite friends are recovering lawyers. So what did you break out of?
I broke out of living a palatable and probably conventional life, a life that looked good to other people but felt crappy to me. So that's what I broke out of in a very messy, not linear way, for sure.
I want to see the person who breaks out in a clean, linear way. Like, really? Who's that person who breaks out like, let me have a plan. Here's a project plan for it. And in 2 weeks, I'm going to have a slight breakdown. And then in 3 weeks, I'm going to bounce back. Like, who? I don't
know. You know what? Probably lawyers are trying to escape their life. Probably like, yeah, I'm going to make a plan and it's going to be fine. It's going to be scary, but I'll be able to mitigate it. And it's like, it doesn't work like that at all.
You started off in entertainment law. What led you there?
So a couple of things. When I was 5 years old, I was staying with my grandmother and my mom comes in and I'm like, look at me, look at me. And my grandmother turns and looks at me and she's like, what? I do this very dramatic death. And she's like, oh my God, amazing, beautiful. You're gonna be an amazing actress one day. And my mom goes, she's not gonna be an actress. She's gonna be a lawyer. And I think it starts there, right? I was like, oh, okay. From early on, I had a path that was not only expected of me, but it was kind of ingrained. Like, this is what you're good at. This is who you are. And so I pursued it. And I went to undergrad and I got an internship with a really famous super producer in Atlanta. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to be an entertainment attorney. So that's one way for me to do something I'm interested in, but I'm still an attorney. And then I actually went to law school in Miami and I convinced an entertainment attorney in Miami to let me shadow him. And he's amazing. But I was like, this is not what I thought being an entertainment attorney was. Which is what I think a lot of people think, somehow you're in the mix. It's like, no, you're just an attorney with entertainment clients. That's really what it is. It's contracts. And then I was like, oh no, I don't want to be an entertainment attorney. And so I started having a little bit of a crisis my very first year in law school. And then I was like, oh goodness, I'm coming into my second year of law school. And I'm like, oh, I don't think I want to be a traditional lawyer. And that's very strange to say out loud in a law school to your academic advisor. People are like, what do you mean? There wasn't a lot of people who were doing different things with law at the time. So it's kind of like a dirty secret to have. And I had a very fateful email come across my inbox. They had this article about this fantastic woman who was the director of the incubator on the undergraduate campus. She'd been an entrepreneur since she was 16. She did all this cool stuff. And I was like, she knows the answer. I don't know how she knows, but she knows the answer. She's done a lot of things.
Christine followed that instinct, met with the director of the incubator, and landed a job working with student entrepreneurs.
And that changed everything for me because the whole premise of the work that I did was to be a consultant and guide for student entrepreneurs and some of our alumni entrepreneurs, helping guide them from idea, strategy to execution, scale family businesses. Once I started working there, everything made sense. Not only from maybe an educational background, but also in a heart-centered way. The feeling that I had of people coming to me and telling me almost like their deepest, darkest secret, because starting a business is like that, right? And being able to hold space for people to just unleash, it felt so affirming. But also, it opened my eyes to how much, as women in particular, we discount ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Because my clients that would come in that were women, they would always come in with like these huge fat binders. I'm like, well, I have this idea, but I don't know. And you're like, girl, you have a whole binder. I feel like you have a business. Like, what are we talking about? You know, as opposed to the guys that would come in, they'd be like, I had a dream last night. It's a whole new pool noodle. Walk with me. And I'm like, I'm walking with you. So having that experience, I was like, wow, I want to do something heart affirming. But I also was like, I started to become acutely aware that, wow, if all these women that I think are fantastic and amazing, I'm like, you're amazing, but why are you doubting yourself? And at the time, it was like a little bit of a seed planted.
Working with entrepreneurs lit a fire in Christine. So when she's offered a role at a Miami startup, she jumps at it. And then another opportunity arrives. She is invited on a trade mission to South Africa. And instead of taking the bar exam, she goes to Africa.
Now, this is strange because, you know, I'm president of my law school, which has a lot of great opportunities. Like, you get a lot of visibility. Mm-hmm. People know you. Mm-hmm. You get job offers. And I was like, no, guys, I'm not going to do any of that. It was a huge risk. When you tell people, I'm not going to be a lawyer, I'm not going to take the bar, people start asking a lot of questions. So let me paint this picture. I start telling people I'm not going to be taking the bar exam, which is like, what? Like, you went to law school. You're president of your law school. I was the first Black woman president of the law school. So this was like all these things that people are like,
right,
this does not compute. And also, you're messing up the image that we have.
They're like, no, it's the first Black woman. She must be. Talk about that expectation, too, because you have all that on you. Not just you, yourself, Christine, but the image of the first person to do anything also has a lot more baggage and expectations on them.
Yeah. And, you know, I think some of the questioning that I got for making that decision felt very accusatory. It felt very like, you're not grateful.
Wow.
You know, when we went to Namibia, we had an audience with the then U.S. ambassador to Namibia, who was a Black woman. Now, I was fully aware, and I guess intellectually I knew Black women could be U.S. ambassadors, but I had never met one. So when I go to her residence and she's hosting us and I see her and she's like delightful and amazing, something also changed inside of me. Like, wait, there are other ways to live life. There's other ways to do things. There's just different options. And I started to really think about, why not me? And since I've already pissed off so many people, why don't I just continue pissing them off? It's one of those things where you're just like, well, no one understands me anyway.
What I really appreciate about Christine's story, Kelly, she said she wasn't sure like what she was looking for, but she kind of knew that she was looking for something different. And I think sometimes we put pressure on ourselves to articulate exactly what we're looking for, but sometimes we just know what we have doesn't fit. And so we can go on that exploration of finding new things.
And I think when she was in law school and she had that realization that she wanted to do something that was heart-affirming, it's not just the act of, you know, contracts and the legal aspect of the law. It's that she wants it to be meaningful and she wants it to be impactful and she wants the work that she does to have a lasting imprint on someone's life because that is what fulfills her. So I think that's quite lovely.
And I do love, by the way, she's yet another lawyer who has gone away from law. I feel like we could do an entire year's worth of episodes on lawyers who are like, don't be a lawyer, don't practice, no.
Yeah. Christine came back from Africa inspired to find a new path. But back in the U.S., a death in the family brought her back home to Atlanta with her life not taking off the way she'd planned.
Now I'm taking on discovery roles in different law practices because that's the only kind of job I can get back home because I didn't take the bar. So it's like starting to rethink my life choices. I'm like, okay, didn't think this all the way through. And I'm also thinking, I've got to do something. I got to have this life. And at the time, it was about having a life that I guess proved people wrong. And so I was desperate, if I'm honest, desperately trying to figure it out. I was so unhappy that I think my unhappiness drove me. And then about a year after I graduated from law school, I got a break, right? So I had applied for this cool job with this company out of Malaysia. Had I been to Malaysia? No. Did I care? No, I'm going. This is cool. This is amazing. I want to go.
Exactly.
So they give me the offer. I'm like, I'm going to Malaysia. I tell my mom. She's like, you've never been to Malaysia. Do you know where Malaysia is? I'm like, Southeast Asia, and that's all I need to know. I have a farewell party, move out of my amazing apartment in Inman Park, Atlanta. And then in July of 2014, the company emails me, and it's like, hey, we can't really afford you, actually. We can't do this. Oh. So yeah, you don't have a job.
Oh.
When I tell you, I was angry.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an understatement. Yeah.
Right? Because It was a feeling of like, what the hell, man? Now I have egg on my face because I had a farewell party and I'm not leaving. And I gave up my beautiful apartment and now I'm in the suburbs with my mom. Yeah. And it's like... Universe, what the hell? And I was so angry. And my mom was like, you've got to calm down. Like, you need to relax. And so she said, go on a hike and like, you know, relax. Like you have food, you got shelter, relax, girl. And so I did. I went, there's a mountain in a park close to her old house. And I remember walking and cursing. I sound like a crazy person. I was just like, what do you want? Like, universe, like, what must I do? And while I'm walking, I'm just like, what should I do next? And that's when the thought to walk the Camino Santiago came to me. And I was like, what? No. It was like, I'm outside. I enjoy a stroll. I was like, this is horrible. Give me something else. I was mostly like talking to the universe. Like I was thinking more of like a job or like a someone I should email. It came to me and it wouldn't leave me alone. It was something that was dogged and like something that was really scary because usually when you have like crazy thoughts, you could be like, ugh, that was weird. That was strange.
Yeah.
It wouldn't leave me alone. And all the things that needed to happen for this walk to happen, it all fell in place seamlessly, yeah, without effort. And in 3 weeks from there, I was in Spain starting the Camino Santiago. And it was a life-enhancing experience, to say the least.
We'll get back to the interview after this quick break.
The Breakout comes to you from Abrachi Group. We offer coaching and consulting to help you dig into change. Here's what we know. Only about 10% of us are really self-aware. Without self-awareness, improvement is tough. Because if you don't know what box you're in, you can't break out of it. That's where we come in.
We've got a soft spot for people itching to forge a fresh path. The high flyers who need to be nudged out of career ruts. Teams who are looking to become more aligned. And yes, even those bold souls who've occasionally worn the jerk badge. Connect with us at abrachigroup.com. Christine, how did you first know about the Camino, and why do you think that like popped into your head at that moment? I'm sure you reflected on it, but like, how did you even know that it existed?
So 6 months before my whole world fell apart, I was at like a New Year's party and I had a bunch of friends and we were all talking about our intentions for 2014. What is, you know, it's going to be our year. Yeah. And my friend, she was like, oh yeah, I want to do this walk across Spain where you just take everything that you have and it's just like on your back, you just walk across Spain. And I was like, why would you do that? You know? And she was like, yeah, it's like going to be so amazing. And I just remember thinking like, that sounds good for you, but no. So when it came to me 6 months later, I really did try to shake it off, but it really wouldn't leave me alone. And to the point where I was like, after 2 days, like it was like a constant kind of thing. After 2 days, I finally just looked it up. I was like, okay, what is this Camino Santiago? It's like, oh, it's 800 kilometers. I was like, oh, hell no. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Let me go back to my original hypothesis. No.
Absolutely not. I was like, oh, I can't. I'm too much of a damsel. I can't possibly do it. Scroll down the page. I think they were like forums at the time. And there was like this woman, she was like 68 years old, no lie. And she was like, this is my 18th Camino. And I was like, oh my gosh, grandma is showing me up. And I was like 27, 26 at the time. And I was like, there's no really excuse for you. Like, get out there. And it was not an experience leading up to it that was joyful.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
The Camino came to me. It wouldn't leave me alone. I investigated it. I talked to my friend whose idea it was for her to go. Everything did fall into place very easily, so easily that I was like, this feels suspicious. Like, what is going on? And I followed it, but I didn't want to. I followed it and I cried every single day until I got on the plane to go.
Oh my goodness.
My mom was like, you don't have to go. Like, my poor mother was like, who is this child? Like, what is going on with you? But to her credit, she was like, I love you. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's going on inside.
Right.
But, you know, I got you no matter what. But it was an important experience for me because I realized that there's going to be moments, and there have been subsequent moments in my life in which my intuition, there's this call to do something, usually to evolve in some type of way. And it doesn't feel rosy. It doesn't feel like, you know, bath bombs and crystals, self-care. Like, sometimes it's scary and you're like, this is, I don't know what the hell I'm doing and I'm crying and yet I'm being called to do it.
Struggling with multiple crises of confidence in the week before she departed and in the days after she landed in Europe, Christine finally arrived at the starting point of the journey.
I made it to Saint-Jean, which is where the Camino Frances starts. I had a guidebook, but I had no idea what I was getting myself into at all. And the first day of the Camino Frances is a very crazy day. You go up the French Pyrenees, you come down on the Spanish side. And once again, I was crying by the end of the day. And I was like, I keep on making the wrong decision for my life. I just kept on thinking that. I was like, you keep on making the wrong decision for your life. This doesn't make any sense. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing? I fully expect after the first day, I'm going home. I'm going home. I took a shower. I got a beer, and I never drink beer, but I was like, I need all of the things. Give me two beers, give me a sandwich, give me something. And I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to tell my mom, just kidding, I'm coming home. And I go walking around the city. It's called Roncesvalles. And I stop in a church and I'm like, okay, this is nice. And I'm sitting in the very back of the church and I'm just like, okay, just taking in the ambiance. And a priest comes up to me and he was like, where are you from? I'm like, the United States. And he's like, oh, come sit here. So I was like, this is interesting. Okay. So I'm seated in like the front pew with all these other people. The service starts in Spanish. And I was like, okay, realizing I'm like, I don't think I speak as much Spanish as I thought I spoke, but okay. He starts bringing people off of the first pew. And I'm realizing they're all speaking like, oh, in different languages. And he comes to me. He's like, and our friend from the United States, Christine. And I was like, oh, I don't know what's happening. I walk up and I read this kind of passage in English. He was so kind. He was like, you've never been to Catholic Church before. I was like, I haven't. And that experience was just enough kindness and enough just hilarity and me just being a complete fool for me to be like, you know what? Maybe I will continue on this journey.
Yeah. You did this walk. You eventually stopped crying every day, or did you cry every day? I just got to know.
No, I cried every day for sure. Did you? Okay. If it wasn't emotions, it was tendonitis and I lost like several toenails. I cried every day.
Oh my God. What did you learn and get a better understanding about yourself when you completed the Camino walk?
I finally recognized that, you know, what I'd been searching for, which was some type of external validation, some type of marker, like I've made it and things like that. And the Camino doesn't give you that, actually. I mean, yeah, eventually you get to Santiago and you have the Compostela and you're like, I did this. But it doesn't matter. all of a sudden it doesn't matter. I recognized that, and this is going to sound strange, but like I could do anything. Meaning like I really could put one foot after another, paso a paso. Mm. I could do anything that I wanted to do. It was going to take a lot of effort. It was going to take a deconstruction of myself, my feet, but I could do something. Like I could make it happen. I could lean in that direction and end up, you know, starting from the French Pyrenees to the Atlantic coast of Spain. And I could make it somewhere. I could do that. Mm. And that changed everything for me because I think that experience made me recognize that I was going to have to be a much more present and active participant in my life, much more than I had before. On one hand, you could say, but you went to school, you did all these things. Yeah, but I also followed a script for someone else. And I was expecting to feel a certain kind of way about the accomplishments. And it wasn't fulfilling. And I couldn't understand why.
Yeah.
And then I recognized that for this fulfillment, for me to actually feel satiated in some type of way, I was going to have to be an active participant and architect for my life and cultivator of my life. I was going to have to set the standards for me. That's it. And I had to start getting a steel kind of stomach to be able to live a life that wasn't palatable or understandable for a lot of people, especially at first, right? Now people are like, you're amazing. You're great. But like for a long time, people are like, you are so befuddling. You're just weird. And the Camino gave me that strength. It made me realize that not only physically did I have the capacity, but emotionally. And I have to tell you, I'm not a crier, but like I recognized that that space that was being cleared out by crying and emoting, I needed it. I needed it to get clarity. I needed it to be able to cultivate the life that I'm currently living.
I mean, to be told at such a young age that you're going to be a lawyer, it didn't sound like there's a lot of debate around that. You're going to be a lawyer. Okay. We hear it all the time, Kelly, when we do career coaching and things where it's my parents told me I needed to earn money or I needed to do this and I couldn't do what I really wanted to do.
Yep.
And it just rarely works out.
I also like the idea of examining why you are afraid to live a different life, or examine the fear. It is hard to look under the hood and to explore any part of yourself, but when you can at least take a little bit of a peek, it can really prove to be truly beneficial. And in Christine's case, it totally changed her life. And you don't necessarily have to do a Camino. You don't have to walk across Spain to do that necessarily, but it can manifest in different ways. It can appear to you in different ways. But maybe there's something that's been calling out to you and you've been crying about it because it's been a bit unnerving, but maybe that's the one thing that you should be doing.
Yeah. Well said, Gunther, as usual. Christine, Kelly says that a lot of like, how do you architect your own life, right? And I know Kelly has some follow-up questions on what happens now. So I'll turn it over to Kelly.
Well, and thanks for sharing about your journey. And as a fellow crier, I cry all the time. And it allows for sometimes the most amazing moments of vulnerability to come out too, and really shed your skin and the emotions that come with it. So thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing with us, Christine. So you now live in Spain.
Yes.
And your work now focuses a lot on wellness and helping women make the leap into entrepreneurship. So what is like the single most fulfilling aspect of what you do now?
The single most fulfilling aspect is that I'm actually more of myself in every way possible. Like, I figured out my combination of like superpowers or just competencies that are marketable, so yay, but like that actually make me just excited every day. Like my strongest, I guess, characteristic is that I'm a natural connector. I network really well, I suppose. I just think it's relationship building. And I've been able to leverage that in a really interesting way for my clients. And I think also that I've had this strange career path that gives solace to a lot of my clients because, you know, a lot of my clients don't have that kind of crazy trajectory, but they feel crazy. They feel out of their mind. I feel that I've been able to leverage my experiences, my knowledge, my interest in a really impactful way to amplify other women, to amplify their impact in the world. And for me, that has been just the most satisfying. Sometimes I think about, I could have been a lawyer, I could have been a partner by now, but I really like my life. And I can honestly say that I chose it. It didn't just happen to me. I own it and it feels good for me.
And you're a testament to it is messy and it is complicated and it can be painful and that you don't necessarily know what is around the corner, but if you trust your gut, good things can happen and that you have a support system around you that can help along the way as well. So to kind of round out our conversation, Christine, you have 1 minute with someone who is stuck and they want to break out. What do you tell them?
I tell them, who are you currently performing for and why? And how do you feel? Because, you know, you're performing for someone and you feel like you're doing a good job, but maybe they're like all of us. You know, we have you in the background like Netflix, but we're also doing something else. So you feel like you're giving it your all. You feel like everyone's watching you, but everyone is, you know, we're on our phones. You know, we're not actually paying attention. So if you want to break through and get unstuck, I think that's the first thing you have to ask yourself, who are you performing for and why? And maybe instead of performing for someone, examine why you're so afraid to articulate your life, right? To be a present, not only participant, but cultivator of your life. What type of thing are you trying to avoid by speaking your truth, using your honest voice? When I think about who I could have been, right? Because it was a choice. That is a woman that was performing for my parents, my mother, the people I went to law school with, the people who could see me on LinkedIn. And now I'm not performing for them. I am living my life. I'm making decisions that I can stand on, put some bass in my voice behind, but you know, it's my own.
Thank you so much, Christine, for sharing your story and for being vulnerable with us. I appreciate you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Christine.
That was recovering lawyer, business strategist, podcaster, and Camino walker, Christine Jobe. And this is The Breakout from Abbracci Group.
At Abbracci Group, we specialize in coaching and consulting for brave new directions. Connect with us at abbraccigroup.com.
And don't forget to subscribe to The Breakout so you never miss a new episode. And make sure you're following us on Instagram at The Breakout Pod. I'm Kelly Gunther.
And I'm Dr. Carrie Ulrich. See you next time.